Our colleague, the Honorable Kekana, has lost a husband who was ill for some time in and out of hospital. He passed on last week. So our condolences to the husband of our colleague, Honorable Kekana. I think maybe we must just stand up and observe a moment of silence. May his soul rest in peace. Funeral arrangements will be communicated to the members and to everybody who's interested in attending the funeral service, which is going to be in Rustenburg this coming Saturday. But all the details will then be communicated to members and to everybody. We've got an apology from the minister. She's not able to attend the meeting today because she has got some other pressing matters in Pretoria. We've got other apologies from the members. I think we've got an apology from Honorable Steenkamp. She was Edwards before, she's now Steenkamp. Back to her old surname. So when I say Honorable Steenkamp, you must just be aware that it's Honorable, or must I say former, Edwards. So she's back now using her own surname. She's going to be joining us at around 1. I think she's going to consult. And we've got an apology from Honorable Nyambi, Honorable Luyenge, and Honorable Mapika, and Honorable Mtulu. So a little bit thin because most of our members are also serving in other committees, and it looks like members are prioritizing those committees because this is a committee week. They are prioritizing those committees other than this one. But we are fine, we can proceed with the meeting to receive the presentations. So I'm going to invite, but of course it's possible that some of the members are preparing themselves for Thursday. As you know, Thursday, there's supposed to be a SON, State of the Nation address, on Thursday. Whether it's going to take place or not, we're not sure, but for now we are working on the assumption that it's going to take place. But it does look like its future is hanging in the balance. So we'll get an update this afternoon from the meeting of the parties, whether the SONA is proceeding or is not proceeding. So we will keep our ear on the ground and get the latest on that. Welcome, DG, and the leadership of, or the senior management of the department, and the ESCOM representative, Mr. Govenda is here, and I think with colleagues, and from Sasol, I saw some familiar faces. You are welcome to this meeting. Of course, honorable members, you are, as usual, welcome to the meeting. I'm told we've got representative from the NGOs. I see the two gentlemen there at the back from the NGOs. They were here in the last meeting when we had a workshop. So you are always welcome to our meetings. Okay, we're going to start with the briefing from the department on some developments in December regarding at the Marion Island. There was some incident there that we read about, so we asked that the department must just brief us about what was happening, what happened, how was the situation contained, whether are we going to be able to avoid that kind of a situation in future. So maybe let me hand over to the DG and then to introduce the subject.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. We will give a short presentation, Chair, DDG Judy Beaumont, will give a context of the work in the islands, basically because of the issue that you just referred to about a matter that happened in Marion, which involves staff that is working there or involved in a program. So we'll explain exactly what then pertains to that matter. So we thought that we should just give broadly the context and then make the members then appreciate what pertains and how the conduct of people that are then taken to the islands, whether it's the Marion or at the Antarctica base, what exactly they are expected to, how they are expected to behave. But there are matters that are beyond our control, and we will then outline what happened in this particular case. Judy will then take us through the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Good morning, honourable members. The presentation was circulated, and I'll go through it briefly. I will add a little bit of additional contextual information, which may not necessarily be included in the actual slides as we go, but we'll see. So the South African National Antarctic Program really focuses on South Africa's work in the Southern Ocean and Antarctica. SANAI is the base at Antarctica, and the program includes Marion Island and Gough Island. Logistical support is provided by the Department of Environmental Affairs through the Director Southern Oceans, Antarctica and Islands. Science support is provided by the Department of Science, Department of Science and Technology through also the NRF. And infrastructure planning, deployment, and maintenance is provided by the Department of Public Works. So as honourable members can see, this is quite a cooperative program. It requires good coordination, and we work very closely with map gives you, it's a little bit dark, and apologies for that, but it gives you a sense over on the east side, on the far eastern side below Durban, I guess, you can see Marion Island. It is approximately 1,700 kilometers away from Port Elizabeth. That gives you a bit of an indication of distance. The island is 19 kilometers long and 12 kilometers wide. It has a climate of extensive rain, extensive wind, rain 300 days a year, wind pretty much every day of the year. You'll also see from one or two of the photographs that it is a very beautiful a wilderness area. You can see Gough Island just to the southwest of Cape Town, but we're focusing on Marion Island today, and then you can see Antarctica in the bottom of the picture. Some of the major infrastructure that supports the work on the islands and at Antarctica, you can see up in the left-hand corner, the Agalas II, which honourable members have visited. You can see Sanai, you can see the two bases at Marion Island and Gough Island. So this is just a picture of the base at Marion Island, also with the helipad. It really includes everything. It's a very small village. Structured in a manner that enables the research teams to do their work, to live as comfortably as possible, and provide all the necessary provisions. We also have field huts out on the island because of the weather being fairly rough, I think is probably a way of describing it. When the researchers go out and do research work, they have to walk. As you can imagine, a distance of 20 kilometers being the 19 to 20 kilometers being the full length of the island, and 14 kilometers being the full width. If there is specific research, you may need to walk 5, 6, 7, up to 10 or 12 kilometers. If the rain sets in, the wind sets in, the weather turns, you need to be able to shelter in a small field hut. And these are equipped and managed as small science stations or small research stations. They are equipped with the necessary very basic supplies, food, medical, and to ensure the safety and comfort of researchers or technicians if they are doing their research outside of the main station. In terms of the voyage sequence, as you can imagine, it is quite not only a logistical planning exercise, but also a science planning exercise, and the logistics and the science need to come together. So it really starts with the scientific liaison, and in that area what we're talking about is understanding what research will be done. It's mostly ongoing, long-term research, so many of the researchers go there on an iterative basis. As I've mentioned, the Department of Science and Technology, the National Research Foundation, and universities, various universities, are involved in that process. The expedition members are appointed. They're appointed, some of them are research team members, some of them are technicians, because we do have, obviously we need to have, for example, the issue that came up in the Sunday Times article was the matter of the diesel generator, so you need to have a diesel mechanic. For example, you need to have an electrician, you need to have a number of technicians, a medic, in addition to the research expedition members. So appointments are made. We procure the supplies. Those are procured through the Department of Environment through our supply chain, normal supply chain process. It's an extensive planning exercise. We do team training, and I'll go a little bit more into the team training and the team assessment. We then need to look at the logistics of departure, what is the date, what is the administrative requirements, what cargo needs to be loaded, and partly that is done by the shipping agent or the managing agent of the ship. And partly that is done through the department. We have departure date, getting closer, the cargo is loaded, we deal with customs, we deal with immigration, and then the relief voyage departs, and I'll give you a sense of the timing of all of that, just by way of background and context. So here's an example of a picture, and this is taken inside the warehouse at East Pier Building at the V&A waterfront. The containers are being loaded. You can see the provisions to the right there, food provisions. Just a little bit of history. Marion and Gough Island are part of the Prince Edward Islands. Annexed by South Africa in 1948, their previous Marion Island previously belonged or was managed or owned by the UK, consisting of Marion Islands and Prince Edward Islands. Weather observations started immediately and have been uninterrupted till present. And what is really critical is that this is a long-term weather observation. So. From a climate change perspective, this data and this ongoing long-term climate record is of absolute critical importance, not only to South Africa, but globally as well. The first scientific expedition started in 1965. Marion and Prince Edward Island were declared special nature reserves in 1996. They are pretty much only accessible by ship. The new research base was commissioned in 2011. The governance and conservation arrangements are, there's the Prince Edward Island Management Plan and the Prince Edward Island Advisory Committee, which is established in terms of the Integrated Coastal Management Act. As I've mentioned, the management and conservation of Marion and Prince Edward Island are as special nature reserves in accordance with the National Environmental Management Protected Areas Act. Research activities are permitted. There's the Environmental Conservation Officer is part of the various voyages and the overwintering team. It's really critical that we minimize the human footprint, so any activities at Marion Island or Prince Edward Island are very carefully managed, carefully controlled, and to ensure that there is no further degradation and really to enable the ongoing research in a very wild wilderness and relatively untouched area. So in terms of the research work that is done, you can see that weather observations are the responsibility of the South African Weather Service. The monitoring of seabirds is partially, we have a team in the Department of Environmental Affairs. We also have a team operating from the University of Cape Town. Marine mammals is particularly managed through University of Pretoria, marine top predators through Nelson Mandela University, botany, Stellenbosch and the University of Pretoria, space and weather through SANSA, geomorphology through Rhodes, fur seals through the PE Museum, engineering through the University of KwaZulu-Natal. This is a team that is very productive in terms of scientific papers, 1,000 published scientific papers up to 2010, and more than 200 postgraduate degrees. So a very critical, I think you can get a sense of an important research site and an important source of research that is applicable not only to South Africa, but to the region and globally. So the question, why South Africa on Marion Island? It was an agreement between the UK. In 1908, the British government assumed ownership of the islands, and in 1948, South Africa, with Britain's agreement, annexed the islands and installed the weather station. The weather systems experienced by South Africa originate in the Southern Ocean, and having a monitoring station at Marion Island allows the South African Weather Service to be able to forecast severe weather and destructive events. In particular, our cold front systems come up from that part of the ocean. Marion Island presents a unique opportunity to undertake long-term monitoring and research without being influenced by human activities, and hence the importance of really managing the footprint at Marion Island and ensuring that we limit human impact. Some of the fauna and flora are unique to the island and can only be studied at the island, certain seabirds and marine mammals. And it provides an opportunity for ecosystem and climate change monitoring. I think we've made that point. The overwintering team consists of 21 people. I've already mentioned the technical team.
What is overwintering?
So that's the team that is stationed at the island for a period of 13 months over the winter period. The team includes technicians, electrical, diesel technicians, electronics technicians. So there's three of the technicians, technical staff. There's three weather observation staff. There's two conservation staff. There's a medic, a space weather expert. 11 research field assistants, and the expedition departs in April and returns in May the following year. So it's a 13-month period in which people are stationed on the island. So the last team departed in April 2016 and is due to return in May, in I think the second week of May this year. The next team will depart in April this year and return in May next year, and there's an exchange period of a couple of weeks in which you have both teams located on the island to ensure that there's a handover from one team to the other. I think just to go back to the issue of assembling and preparing the team, it's a competitive recruitment process, normal recruitment process through our human resources management team. It's a fixed-term contract that is provided. We seek to ensure that it is a diverse team, both in terms of age, gender, race, ethnicity, and culture. The team leader and the deputy team leader are selected to take on this additional responsibility of being team leader and deputy team leader over and above whatever their other functions might be on the team. So it's a responsibility of leadership, a very critical responsibility, particularly where there may be team dynamic difficulties or other difficulties. There is a 1 to 3 month period of of on-the-job training and a survival training of 2 weeks that covers a number of courses, including first aid, firefighting, team dynamics, cooking, and rope work. And I think what's important is that this is an extreme environment. It's an extreme environment to be living in. It's a very isolated environment. You're far away from home for more than a year, 13 months, and it does require certain survival skills in case one is caught in difficult weather or caught in some difficult circumstances, or there may be a fire. You have to look after yourself in terms of cooking and organizing food. So this training is a really critical part of the team preparation before leaving to join, or before leaving on the Agulhas to spend the 13 months at Marion Island. It is important to be cognizant of the fact that isolation, being far from home, being with a small group of people, 21 is a relatively small group, a very small group of people to cohabit with for a period of 13 months, does have different impacts on people. First of all, you have the normal process of strangers being brought together, and the team goes through the process of forming, storming, norming, and performing normal team-building processes that that take place. Key issue is that team members cannot return from the island unless there is a life-threatening illness. You would understand that for a vessel to go and fetch the team is a costly exercise. It's a costly, fuel-consuming exercise. And this point is very clearly explained to members before they leave. That said, of course, if there is a life-threatening illness, all necessary steps would be taken to ensure that there is safety and that the members that are in a difficult situation are brought back to South Africa. Often it is difficult for people that have not been to Marion Island before or not been in a situation of isolation to really fully conceptualize what is expected of them and what the process is likely to be like. In many instances, particularly for the technical staff, people are seeking employment, they need the employment, and so I think that is probably top of mind before they start understanding the context that they're moving into and the impacts of living with a new group of people, a small group of people for a period of time, for a 13-month period. So the training period and the probation period is absolutely critical. It certainly means that people that are wanting to do this need to have an element of adventure. They need to enjoy hiking because if you are walking to the hut or walking to do your research work, it is not easy walking. It's very boggy because of all the rain, and it's a wild environment, so that it's not like walking along a nice paved path. It is tough walking. There's often behavioral experiences, people feel homesick, alcohol abuse is a problem as people try to find a way of dealing with their homesicknesses. There are behavioral changes when people feel at risk or fearful. Personality clashes often happen. There are interpersonal relation challenges. There are often situations of partnering that take place. And then if you have a situation where there are, for example, fewer men than women, or the other way around, you do have the situation of competition for partners, which sometimes leads to a love triangle situation. Management is remote. It takes place remotely. We are the responsible managers in the Department of Environmental Affairs. We have a disciplinary code, which the team is introduced to when we have the training process. If there are disciplinary challenges, we manage that through telephonic meetings. We have to have telephonic bilaterals or multilateral discussions with people telephonically. Effecting actual disciplinary measures is very difficult remotely, because it's not easy to establish evidence. So full disciplinary processes are usually held over until the team returns back to land, and we put in place the necessary support for the team, for example, counseling processes where there are team dynamics that are starting to become difficult. And that second last point, there's the departmental wellness program that is available. That's the counseling services available to members, as well as chaplain services. In the main, teams do get along, but sometimes there are difficulties for some of the reasons that I've outlined above. In terms of team management, as I've said, it's done remotely via the team leader and the deputy team leader, and through our director, Southern Oceans and Antarctica, as well as our chief director. The monthly reporting is done on all aspects of the expedition. The research field assistants report to their various institutions, and teams are required to manage their own supplies, and rations are reported also on a monthly basis. Outgoing team reports are done on what provisions are remaining, and these are used as a baseline in determining what provisioning requirements may be required for the new team. And you'll recall from the Sunday Times article that this was one of the areas in which there was a difficulty, because the 2016 team, when they had done the calculations on remaining provisions, had not also calculated the expiry date on some food requirements, but we'll get to how we deal with some of those challenges. In terms of the interpersonal conflict, as I've said, conflict is expected. It takes place. It's like a family. Any family does have conflict and personality clashes, cultural clashes, alcohol-induced clashes, and, as I've mentioned, the partnering challenges and love triangles. In each case, the Department of Environmental Affairs assesses the circumstances, the facts, the severity, and in particular, we assess risk. And we put in place the necessary measures to reduce risk, and we then assess what is the residual risk and what action needs to be taken in order to deal with that residual risk. Evacuation is always considered as a last resort, unless, as I've mentioned, unless there is a life-threatening injury or a life-threatening illness, in which case evacuation is done immediately. And as I've mentioned, the interventions include counseling, enabling communication of the relevant individuals that may be experiencing difficulties with family members, to really close the gap and to try to reduce that sense of isolation. We try in the event that a person is particularly having difficulty. We also look at ways of reducing workload, reducing demand. However, as I've said, if all else fails, the department will consider evacuation. The cost is in the region of $4 million, $3 to $4 million, depending on where the vessel is at any particular moment. If the vessel is already en route, then it could be a lesser amount. If the vessel has to go from Cape Town, if it is steam, it also depends on the speed of the vessel, because the speed of the vessel obviously affects fuel consumption. So one's looking in the region of $3 to $4 million. In this particular instance, we resorted to a phased approach of counseling and constant follow-up through regular conference calls. This was a situation in which there was competition between two men for one woman. And I think it is well known to everyone probably in this room that feelings of jealousy are very difficult to manage. They're intense. And when you are in an isolated situation and you cannot escape the person that is the subject of the jealousy or the intense feelings, it is not easy to manage. We therefore work with the team leader and the deputy team leader. We work very closely with the team leader and deputy team leader to manage the team dynamics. in this instance, we set up a series of meetings with involving the team leader, the deputy team leader, the relevant all of the relevant individuals, and anyone else that may be able to support the process, such as the medic, the chaplain, etc. We put a counseling process in place so that all individuals that were involved in this particular instance were able to receive counseling and in fact did receive counseling. Remember that the counseling is telephonic because the departmental wellness team is located here in Pretoria.
My difficulty, I don't know whether the members have got similar difficulties, is that we are speaking you are describing a hypothetical situation. And now, I'm expecting, for instance, an explanation about the facts of what happened. So if you say that, for instance, if this happened, we do this, I don't know whether that is actually what happened or that is you are providing a hypothetical situation.
Okay.
Because I'm expecting that you speak to the fact of what happened, the genesis of the problem, the conflict, what led to the conflict, what are the other dynamics, what are the other problems. So please don't speak of a situation that is either about to happen or you are anticipating. Speak to a situation which has happened and tell us what happened there.
Certainly.
Because you keep on saying, for instance, this is what we can do or this is what we do. So I would expect you to say, this is what happened, this is what we did, and so forth.
Certainly, Chair. To some extent, I have been speaking of the facts of this case, but...
in a very confusing way, you know.
Okay, Chair. I think he tried to remove it from the individuals, but it is the case. So I think you must just be clear, Judy.
Okay. So, Chair... the situation is there were two men interested in one woman. And at some point it became three men interested in one woman. The situation was that one particular person became very angry, and from all of the statements, and let me just be very clear that we have we asked and received statements from everybody involved in the case. There was contradiction in the statements that were provided. So each person that was involved in the situation had a slightly different angle depending on where they were at the base at the time. So it was difficult to establish the facts because the statements were quite different. That is why we then convened a series of meetings to try and establish exactly the extent of what happened and what therefore was the risk. The facts of the matter are, as was reported in the Sunday Times, that one of the individuals took the axe that was next to the fire extinguisher and damaged the computer equipment of another one of the individuals. A case has been laid because that is damage to property. And from there, the question was this an individual case of damage to property, or was there likely to be a risk to the individuals? There were two or three fights which were visible, fights as in pushing and shoving, visible arguments, conflict that exacerbated into physical pushing. Those were sometimes in view of other members. They took place, two of them took place in the dining room. And the third, I'm not, in the corridor. Those are the facts. What was also part of the facts was that one of the aggrieved individuals sent a number of emails. So in terms of timing, the issue started in July of this year when the first...
Last year,
2017. Started in July when the first altercation was reported. We then moved into September. Nish, keep me on track here.
Yes.
September, when the second altercation was reported, and the time at which the computer equipment was damaged. And from September onwards, for September, October, November, up till the 15th of December, we were in constant communication in various forms with the team members, the deputy team leader, and the team leader.
It didn't take place in December.
No, it didn't take place in December. It was an accumulative process. The actual hacking of the computer, I can get you the exact date, but that took place in September.
Okay. So the story of one member of a team. Grabbing an axe and running after another one in December is not true.
No,
and
that
one part was also reported.
If I may, I think Nish is the director. Perhaps I should finish.
Judy, can I finish?
Okay. All right.
The other issue which came up was around, well, allegation of some mental problems which is something that you are not speaking to. That somebody was suffering from depression or whatever the case may be.
Chair, one of the individuals was taking medication, or is taking medication, for epilepsy. So it's a medication that is taken for epilepsy.
So he's suffering from epilepsy.
That is what we have subsequently, what has subsequently emerged through our further investigations. We were quite surprised that that had managed to pass through our medical testing.
Because it fits to the recruitment process and the criteria that
indeed
you follow when you recruit members. Obviously, those researchers work under these conditions that you've explained. And you don't meet a person who's got a medical, who's got a this kind of a medical problem. Somebody who's not mentally stable to live in that kind of a environment. So I know members are taking notes on us this thing. That's why I wanted us to speak to the facts, you know, instead of talking about a situation that may or may not exist.
Okay,
do you want to?
Yes, let's just allow baby Nishchuji to just elaborate on this case. And Chair, the information about December is the same email that we received, the same email, I think yourself, Minister, and myself, about the matter. So it did not, the X matter happened, was it in November or was it? It was not in December. It was a month or two before then. Yeah. Thanks. But just elaborate quickly and then speak to the case itself, because we're not sure how much information you should provide in the open.
Okay.
I think Judy was.
There's also an issue of food shortage and generators that will come to. I know you have not reported on this one. Okay. The director,
yes,
responsible for the program.
That's right, for the Antarctic and Southern Ocean logistics.
So you're not given the proper time, because you've just come, you've just arrived when we had already started.
Yes, my apologies for that.
You're not given 9:30.
Eh?
You're not given 9:30.
A long queue at the security chair. He called earlier on.
Is it?
Yes. They were all waiting. That's why I went outside.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay. My name is Nish Devanandan. I think maybe just to put into perspective, the incident happened, as DDG indicated, earlier than December. And in December is when some information got sort of packaged together and reported. And there was no X incident in December, that I can confirm. And as well, in terms of the epileptic and behavioral assessment of the individual, the person passed his medical examination during the assessment. But what we find is sometimes because of the conditions people exposed to, their character profile actually changes. They take a lot of stress and they become less tolerant, especially as time goes by. We even find that people that don't even take alcohol at the beginning of the expedition, as time progresses, they just start overindulging in alcohol. So it's, as we spoke before, it's not exact exact, 100% confirmation when the person passes the medical examination that they would be, sound throughout, psychologically sound throughout the expedition.
Okay, so I guess, but maybe finish the presentation and then we'll ask the questions later.
Okay, thanks Chair. So I think we're close to the end. In terms of the food shortage concerns, DEA procures food supplies based on a formula of rations allocated per person. The teams manage their own food supplies, and the assumption is that the usage would be on a balanced basis. However, the reality is that people will choose to eat the things that they like first. And different teams, depending on how they're constituted, will have different preferences. So one particular team will complain that there was too much red meat, while the next team will complain that there was insufficient red meat. So this is the kind of challenge that we are looking at, and we have some proposals as to how to deal with that. Now, in this particular instance, what happened, as I mentioned, there was an inventory challenge in which certain foods were expired. And we therefore requested, through our cooperation with India, for the Indian ship that was going in that direction to deliver some additional provisions. It was not an emergency situation by any stretch of the imagination. It was certain provisions that were not available. So the food issue was resolved. Going forward, however, we have had a discussion on how we can deal better and improve the food management issue. And one of the proposals is that, in fact, we include a chef on the team, because at the moment what the team is doing is it's a rotational thing, and individuals on the team have the opportunity to do the cooking. We think that possibly a much more coordinated approach to providing food and doing the cooking may work better, and we're going to investigate that urgently. The next team leaves quite soon, so it would be quite difficult to sort it out for this next voyage, but we're certainly going to do our best. Another consideration is that, was it in 2012? In 2011, 2012, there was a visit to the island by political principals. And at that point, there was a real concern that there was too much food on the island. And so there was a decision taken to reduce the food stocks. Now, at that point, the food provisioning included a 20% contingency. And the 20% contingency was taken away. So there was sufficient food.
So when was this visit? 2000. Before 2012, Judy.
Was it before 2012?
Yes, it was with the old previous ministers.
Prime Minister who?
Okay.
Prime Minister who?
Minister von Kassig.
Okay.
But that was around 2009 or so.
Okay,
so that the issue is that we've not quite had a problem with supplies. In the past, we used to be deemed to have access. And now we have managed, with this 20% contingency being taken away, it does look like we then have to revert back to that, because partly also in those days, we used to also receive a lot of returning stuff. And when this food comes back, we dispose of it. So we're managing those, and I think it looks like this time around we need to revisit the formula. That's the essence. But the question is how much of it. That will not be too much. And that's what Judy was saying. We are still working on how we refine the formula.
Okay. Generators?
On the generators, the Department of Public Works is responsible for infrastructure, including generators. There are six generators available at the base, and three are connected and functional at any given time. And the way this functions is that if a generator goes out, another generator is simply brought in to take over. And in this instance, the regularly used spares were available at the base. However, one of the generators was using, the main generator, in fact, was using excessive oil, and the oil stocks were being depleted. And this was why we also requested the Indian vessel to deliver additional oil stocks. The diesel mechanic has subsequently repaired the generator, and the status as of now is resolved. And I think, Nish, you can perhaps add any further details as necessary, and then the last couple of slides are some of the Marion Island fauna, Marion Island flora, and that's it. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, I think with the generators, basically we have a triple redundancy system. So if one fails, there's another one to take over, and if that fails, there's another one to take over. So the diesel mechanic that's on site doesn't normally have to repair any of the generators, and it's just the normal regular maintenance. This time around, there was a situation where all three generators actually failed, and then the diesel mechanic had to repair the generator. So right now they have a working generator and a spare generator, and then there's two backup generators for emergency.
No. Are you done?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
So all the six generators were not working at the time, available at the base?
No, they were at the base. There's actually at the main base there's four generators, and in the emergency base there's two generators. So basically what happened is three of the four generators had problems, and then the diesel mechanic repaired one of those three, and now they have two that are working. And then the two emergency generators that are at the emergency base, that's always been functional. But that's only if there's a fire or the main base cannot be occupied, then the team would relocate to the emergency base. And then there's two generators there for them.
Okay. Also, because you're saying that three generators were not functional, so there was only one that was working.
That's correct, yes.
And you need how many to run the whole system?
Just one generator.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You know, when you read that Sunday Times article, it's like the stuff that happens in the movies. It's dark, the generators are not working, you've got a guy who's mentally unstable, who's holding an axe, running after another of the scientists. Now you ask yourself, hey, what's happening here? Why do you take people who are mentally unstable to that kind of an environment? How come did this person pass the medical tests? when this person, somebody who's epileptic, ideally should not be in that kind of an environment, should not be in an isolation for 13 months. Now, how the person passes the test is something that I really don't understand, unless if the test is not stringent enough. Because when you are doing a medical test, you ask questions, you also do your own verification, you test and all of those things. Now, this kind of mental condition is supposed to be one of the questions that you must ask. To say, are you suffering from this? Are you suffering from this? Are you taking medication for this and that? And of course, if somebody provides wrong information, then there must be consequences for that. So that is the first question, why did we allow that person to go through and be part of the team? Because the story says that is the person who was holding an axe, running after another person. For whatever reason, it might be because of a love triangle thing, or conflicts do arise in any situation. And obviously this person, how he sought to resolve the conflict, resulted in a situation where many of the team members might have been exposed to danger. The second issue is the food shortage for me, because the story says that some of the things there were past the expiry dates. Now the question is, how do we handle procurement? Why do we have to, we know that the team will be there for 13 months. Why do we get stuff that is going to expire in 3 or whatever months? If the story was correct. So I would like you to speak to that. And maybe the other question is, how do you determine the requirements for food? Do you sample the team members, what is their preference and stuff like that before you order? Or you just order the basic stuff? And the other thing is alcohol. How is alcohol supplied there? Because there are no tuck shops or some bottle stores or something like that. So obviously people either bring their own or alcohol is supplied by the department. So if you do supply alcohol, for whatever reason, maybe you are doing it, I don't know. How is it supplied? Where do they get this alcohol in that environment? So those will be my questions. I don't know whether there are questions from members. Honorable Peden and Honorable Khade. Honorable Makuya. Just press there. It's not working. Can you use this one?
Thanks, Chair. You've touched on the alcohol because that's a very important one. You know, is it rationed? I think we need explanation on alcohol. The other one is... it's a suggestion. I mean, NASA sent astronauts into space to spend a lot of time in a lot smaller place. They must have extremely good systems on screening people and that. Maybe we can learn from them. Then I saw an advert, and it was for a diesel mechanic in 2015 from Nish for $289,000 for a 15-month period. Now, for to go to Marion Island for 15 months, it doesn't seem like a very good salary. So there are also question marks to who you're attracting. You know, we've got to ask those questions, because I would have thought someone is going to spend 15 months, there would be a bigger incentive financially.
For how much was it?
$289,000 for the year.
Yo.
So the question marks, I want someone to answer that one. And then the other one is there any, are there consequences for this kind of behavior? Because if you, is there financial service? If you behave like that, we're not going to pay you when you get home. How does one punish people like that? I mean, you're having a nice chat on the phone and you're trying to counsel them, but if people behave like that, they need to be, all actions have consequences that need to be punished. And maybe financial is one of them. If you can just answer that, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also wanted to get clarity on the issue of vetting, because it's important whether you take people on such an undertaking. You need to make sure that the people that goes there will be able to cope. The second one, Chairperson, I received the email from the person concerned, and I also spoke to the DG, because I was really concerned when I got the email. About the situation that was happening there. According to him, he was attacked in July last year, and he followed protocol. There was nothing done for that period up to the 2nd of November, where he was attacked by eggs. And he also wrote to me, because he didn't know what to do, wrote to the department. What did the department do in that instance when he reported for the first time? The guy tried to save him. And according to him, he followed protocol, reported nothing. I've got the names of the individuals, but I can't say them, because it seems like the DG is also protecting them for now. But I'm really concerned if there was nothing done in that period. I hear that during the presentation that there are calls that are made to sort of advise them how to deal with the situation. But according to this gentleman, there was nothing, not even a word saying that the disciplinary action will be taken against the individual. What did the department do? I would like that question to be answered. The second one, I heard from the presentation that at any given time, the main generator will be running continuously. How did it use excessive oil? And then that led it in the position where the oil reserves or whatever oil that was there was depleted. Because according to the presentation that we received, at any given time, the main generator will be running. So if these other generators died, but the main generator needs to be continuously producing electricity, I don't know how it can use excessive oil, because according to the presentation, it's continuously running, producing. So if I can catch the response on that, I'll be really happy to have this.
Thank you, Honorable Makuya. Just the following. Perhaps let me start this way. We are assured that the situation now is resolved. Perhaps we need to get that by the time we conclude that the situation has been arrested and everybody is happy. Perhaps not really happy, but that it won't necessarily persist and so on. Chair, I also have a similar question to what Honorable Hadev is asking. Because when the generator started using excessive oil, it means to some degree it was defective and it was not detected. Either more oil was just applied or put in and the next thing there was no oil at all. Perhaps we could just be clarified on that one. But back to the situation, how long does it take for you to address challenges that people have in there? I'm trying to work out a scenario because there are these team leaders and I even want to understand their powers. What powers do they have to can resolve challenges there? But at the point that you get to know, you are informed, how long does it take for you to resolve the challenges that people may have? The other issue because we can't just rely on the recruitment process. I was looking at the 21 persons who get there at one given point. If I happen to pass the test and I'm there as one of the members who are on the island, but somewhat develop a suicidal tendency, how do you deal with that? Because people are people, you can't guarantee that necessarily because when they were recruited, they were in good behavior, they will necessarily stick to that. Are there ways in which we can, as those people who are there, or even with the assistance of those of us who are this side, we can assist them? Perhaps the last two chair, which is general, is not necessarily about the issue that we were interested in. How is waste management done there, generally? Because people stay for the entire year. But also on the training, on the job training, do we give them the same training, or is on the job, meaning that depending on what you are going to be doing there, just to understand, because these people are not the same. How do we handle that one? Thanks.
Okay. Those are the questions. How has the problem been resolved? Is the person still there who was suffering from that condition? When are they coming back also? Or are they back now? Okay, who's going to answer the question? Okay, start.
Okay, I think the first question with regards to expiry dates of the food, there is some food items that don't have a longer than a year shelf life. And we actually informed the team about that. It's something that all Antarctic programs grapple with, because some things even have a shelf life of 6 months, like some wheat flour and things like that. So we focus on how the food is being stored. In some cases, we would have them in cool locations, like in the fridge or freezer and things like that. But some team members actually don't necessarily want to have food that has actually expired. No? Others are comfortable with having it. And in some cases, we can't avoid it because the manufacturer only gives us that maximum 6 month shelf life, and the expedition is 13 months. The ship only goes once a year, so whatever we take there is the year's supply. So based on how it is stored and how it is prepared, we have actually got sort of a confirmation that it is still fit for consumption. So in the case of expiry dates, there are some that we actually cannot change. Then in terms of epilepsy hasn't been confirmed in the individual. What happened is when the behavior patterns were shown, epilepsy medication was administered to him. When the...
Administered by who?
By the medic. Or the on-site medic with advice from the South African Military Health Services, who we have a MOU with, that actually advises and train the medic and the doctors that go on these expeditions. So in terms of food rations, how we determine it is based on...
Just talk to the epilepsy story.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Why was it administered? Because you can't administer something for something that does not exist. So the person is not suffering from epilepsy.
That hasn't been confirmed, because in the... Remember, this behavior only showed up when he was already at the island. And during the medical assessment, which I'll be answering the question about how the assessment is done, there's a form that's filled in terms of any historical illnesses or epilepsy or convulsions, and the person is just required to declare it or as whether it's there existing or not. So in this case, the person actually indicated that he did not have any epileptic conditions. So when the behavior when this misconduct took place and the erratic behavior was noticed, the medic at the island actually made contact with South African Military Health Service, and this medication was recommended that is usually given to people who are having epileptic attacks.
So what is the situation? The person does not suffer from epilepsy, or the person suffers from epilepsy? What is the doctor saying, or the medic? Who's the medic? Is the doctor or?
No, the medic, medical orderly, who's basically schooled in emergency medicine and remote medicine. So he does not necessarily have the facilities or the ability at that island to determine whether the person really is epileptic or not.
Maybe, Chair, to probably answer, the medical assessment is done before they leave.
Mm-hmm.
So now what we have done, because the only time the person or the people can return from the base is when our vessel goes there, we have made arrangements in general to get, I think the acting DDG, when Judy was not here, I instructed him to explore opportunities for evacuating the individuals, all of them, not just the one that had an X, the whole three of them that is involved in this matter, to then be brought back. And when they are brought back, then there will be also a medical assessment to confirm exactly what the state is with the three insulators.
They are still at the island.
They are still at the island right now. So when they return, when we get the first opportunity we have, we said both with the Navy vessels, when it goes past, they can divert and go and fetch the individuals. Right now, our vessel will only go in April, as Judy has already explained. So the calculation that was done by the team here was whether do we need to send the vessel. The minister was of the view that the vessel must be sent in November or December when the email was sent to us. However, I think the costs associated with it, $4 million expenditure, which I don't have currently. So we have requested that they be kept separate and be monitored whilst before they are brought back to the base or to the country inland. So I wanted to quickly then go through some of the questions so that we don't waste your time, honourable members. One, I think part of what this matter has exposed, I think, Chair, you are right when you say it was like a movie. It's one of those things, Murphy's Law, when one thing goes wrong, it looks like every other thing that was reported, because we receive reports on things that are not working. One, the maintenance of the diesel generators and all the other necessary infrastructure is not our responsibility. It's the responsibility of Public Works. But we then have some ability, because it is our staff that is there that should have a technician that must look in. So those are reported to Public Works, and it depends on when the next opportunity they have to send somebody to actually manage and make sure that the maintenance or repairs is undertaken. So the fact that we have four generators, it then enables that if there is not enough time for Public Works to come back, they can then be evacuated to a different site in order to protect life. So that is what was being explained with those generators that were not working. However, I suggest that, Chair, we come back with a full report once they return. We also bring you the screening protocol. I get partly the screening that is undertaken is not done by DIA. It is done by external parties. So the question is, what opportunities do we have to improve and tighten the screening process? And I think that's something we'll look at, and we can present to the committee what those improvement plans look like. Similarly with the food management system, both the ordering of the food, we will bring you the list of the supplies that, I mean, historically what we've been doing, what has changed, and what are the opportunities of then improving that. Even we can then compare that with what is done even in other bases, because as Judy was showing, that we have other bases that are not too far from the South African base. And then if I come back to the issue of diesel mechanic and the salary matter. Honourable members, historically, people that went to the island were driven by the opportunity as an incentive. It is not everybody that is a scientist who wants to go and work in the island. So their scales could not be completely, we don't have a completely different scale system, but I have improved the scales. Actually, I think three years ago, I had a discussion where we've looked at the scales of the specialists and the technicians in Antarctica, and some of them were complaining, honestly, because partly you want to incentivize both the people that have the experience, because you don't have time to teach either communications logistics manager to just take a chance of taking somebody there just because they have qualification. You have to keep some of the old people that have been doing this work on the base and be able to then have one or two reserves that you introduce so that they are trained. I don't think we've managed that transition well with between the old and the new, also, which is an area where we should actually revisit a niche. I think we had that discussion a year ago to say that partly as much as we want to attract new scientists and young scientists, we also have to bear in mind that there are risks, and the question is whether we throw people in the deep end or we still keep a certain number of people that are interested, because when you also recruit, there's no guarantee that you are going to get the best of what is available in the country. And because we give people those short-term contracts based on the budgets that we have available. So if we had it our way, maybe we should be giving people longer two, three-year contracts, so that then after that group of people, you are able to attract different types of scientists. So we will look at both the incentives, and we can bring you what it used to look like, what the improvements that we've made, and maybe what are the opportunities, knowing now also in terms of this young generation, maybe there isn't that same level of commitment that we used to have from the older people like myself to go and work in such harsh conditions with limited incentives associated with it. So I'm suggesting that we come back with that report, Chair.
Okay.
When they repent, we'll give you a
proposal. Is accepted, maybe let's just terminate it there. But there are just few easy questions that can be answered on the alcohol thing and the complaints. How long does it take to respond to a complaint? But I will agree with you. Let's allow the department, as soon as they are back, do the evaluation and then come and give us that report back. Honorable Perry?
It's come to my attention, in your diesel, you said oil was delivered by the Indian vessel. So you've obviously got a relationship with other countries and other shipping companies. So I'm struggling to understand why we had to contemplate sending a vessel to evacuate, where we could just put the guilty party on one of those ships and come to some agreement with one of those people.
Well, it will take them to India.
That's fine. It's much cheaper to fly someone from India to South Africa than 4 million.
Okay, it sounds practical, but I don't know what are the things.
If I can respond to that, that vessel was on the way to Antarctica, not to India. And it's not many vessels pass Marion Island or in the vicinity because it's a marine protected area. So we had to make a special request from the Indian vessel to actually go there en route to Antarctica.
So it was going to Antarctica, not to India.
That's right.
Alcohol.
It's an Indian vessel
going
to Antarctica. Yes.
Okay.
So I think, Honorable Patton, you are right. We do have relations. But again, all of those we still have, when you make those arrangements, you are diverting somebody's vessel, and you also still have a cost associated with it. So in this case, we looked at which other vessel could pass coming back. At this point in time, the earliest opportunity that we thought we're exploring is the one of the Navy, if possible, that they can come back earlier. But all the others are coming back around April, May. There is not a vessel coming back to the shore. Can I call us the shore?
Back
to the shore.
South Africa.
Back home. Okay, talk to the alcohol.
Okay, I think for whether the department provides alcohol, we don't. And the team members bring their own alcohol supplies. And, I mean, for somebody that takes alcohol to stay for 13 months without it, I mean, they tell us plain down we rather not take the employment. So, I mean...
come again?
I say, for somebody who consumes alcohol, to stay for 13 months without it would be like a torture to them. So they actually tell us, no, if that is a condition that you're not going to allow any alcohol, then I rather not go on this.
But the amount... something that's worrying. So if there is excessive use of alcohol, it means it's supplied in huge quantities. And I can imagine a scientist just carrying bottles and bottles of wines or whiskey. I mean, how do you regulate that?
Okay, at this...
Remember, it's supplied only once when they go, and it's for 13 months.
Yeah, at this stage, we only give them a weight limitation. So some of them, and obviously, they buying it out of their pocket, so a year's supply of alcohol will actually be determined by how much they're willing to spend and that weight limitation. But in terms of saying you can only take two cases.
What is the weight limitation?
We have 100 kgs.
Of alcohol?
Yes.
100 kgs?
Of cargo, not just alcohol. Yes, of the total personal belongings is 100 kgs.
Okay, but we can check in our records how much we've been taking to the island. Maybe just to give you a perspective of how much alcohol is there.
See, it's an issue that you must
yes,
look at.
Something
because it's a, remember, it's not a social outing. It's a scientific expedition, so to speak. People are going there to work, to research some things, to do whatever that they're supposed to do. So alcohol is obviously something that must be limited. You can't say people mustn't take it. But there has to be some kind of limit on alcohol. Because otherwise you're going to have a bunch of scientists staying there drinking every day. Because that's what you are likely to have. So you must, as a matter of fact, or of policy, determine some kind of regulations or policy on how alcohol must be used, must be consumed. Remember, you are in charge of that program. It's not that people are just there to party or something like that. So I will strongly recommend that. It's an area that we must look at and control, because that is within your powers to do that.
Yeah, we'll look into it, Chair. And certainly it's weekends where you have limited control, but maybe the rules must still flesh out even during the weekends if somebody is using their supply, that what is permitted.
Okay.
Thanks.
So I think we will just terminate the discussions here. It has taken more than what I anticipated. But you see, when Judy makes a presentation, she's long. Of course, you must extract this information, because you know, Judy likes doing long explanations. But it's fine. Thank you very much for that. We will then end here on the note that we will then receive a follow-up report as suggested by the DG, so that we can firm up some of the recommendations that we will make to the department regarding this. Because we don't want this kind of incident, because they don't create a good image, because this is a scientific adventure which must continue. It must be protected, because we get valuable information from that. So you need to protect it so that people don't have to develop a view that it is just chaotic out there. You can imagine people being away from home for this long period of time, and they are just fighting among themselves and stuff like that. So we must, as much as possible, try to avoid it. Conflict will always be there when a couple of people come together, but I'm sure you also anticipate this, so there must be a way of trying to manage this conflict. So probably conflict management is supposed to be an inherent subject that people must be taught. You say this on the job training. So it's something that you must invest more time. Probably some of the people sent there must consist of some psychologists who are able to do this kind of intervention now and again. You want to, Honorable Khadeb, I thought I was wrapping up.
I think we forgot to mention the turnaround time for in responding to the complaints, because it's critical important to get that too.
How long does it take to respond to a complaint?
Thanks. Normally what would happen is the team leader and the deputy would actually be the first responders, and if they escalate the matter, then it would come to me or my team members, and then we would, like, within a few days, depends on how severe the complaint is, we would respond to them.
So this one you couldn't respond to?
No, indeed, there was a response for this one. The person was even given a final warning, but it's not something that needed to be broadcasted. But what tends to happen is people start undermining and ridiculing each other, and what will happen is it could exacerbate the situation, because they start to play the blame game. And
I think the follow-up discussion will then deal with some of the outstanding questions, including the WIPS question on the role of the team leaders, the powers they have in resolving the disputes, and all of that. I think we'll finalize it in the next discussion. Yeah, the issue raised about whether shouldn't you introduce monetary penalties and stuff like that. So those are some of the questions in the interest of time that could not be handled. But we will have a further opportunity. Can we break for about 2-3 minutes to allow people to set up, and then we get into the MES presentation?